Welcome to the special edition of the Hey Fightin' Podcast Network. It's Patrick Wright, radio voice of the LSU women's basketball team. It's a big week coming up. It's LSU. It is South Carolina. The last two national champions in women's basketball are going to face off. My pleasure to be joined by Brad Muller, who is the radio voice of the South Carolina women's basketball team. We got a few things in common. We are both working at our alma mater, both have journalism degrees from our alma mater. Brad took a little detour down to Georgia College for about 14 years and made it back, but he's in his 17th year. Dawn Staley is in her 16th year, so Brad is going to give us a unique look at how the South Carolina program was built. But before we get into game week and the talk of the big game, Brad, how's it going? Guys are having off to a good start.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's a much different group this year, but as we've talked about before, you and I have some great gigs. We get to watch some great basketball and two of the elite programs right now, and it's going to be a lot of fun coming to your place on Thursday.
Well, last two national championships, and we're going to dig into how the South Carolina program became what it was. We're going to it helps to get kind of some insight, and Brad has won a couple of national championships with his squad, and we're going to talk about some common experiences we've had with that. But first, before we dig deep, when the schedule came out here in Baton Rouge, every fan that I know, the first thing they immediately circled, January 25th, South Carolina. It's been all the fans can talk about. They're looking forward to it. I'm curious, is there any amount of similar buzz in South Carolina in regards to this game coming up against LSU?
I think there is now because of how the season has progressed, but I have to be honest, at the beginning of the year, I didn't know what to expect because I didn't think South Carolina was going to be bad because of what Coach Staley built, but the Gamecocks graduated seven players from last year and all five starters.
Yeah.
So this is basically a completely different team than the last time these two teams met here in Columbia last year. And so, I wasn't sure if it was going to be as a marquee as it is right now because of the success South Carolina has enjoyed so far this year. I don't think Coach Staley was quite sure in the summer what this team was going to be because, she has said in interviews around here, they didn't look so good at the beginning of the summer when they were playing together and doing things. They weren't really in shape. And again, when you have to replace all five starters and seven overall, I was just hoping, hey, maybe we can be a tournament team again and, maybe get to the Sweet 16 and things like that. And then all of a sudden they opened the season in Paris against a good Notre Dame team and, kicked their tail. And it's like, well, I guess maybe they're going to be pretty good. And, knock wood, they've played well. Like any program, it's still a work in progress when you have this many new kids, but it's been unexpectedly a little better than I thought it would be. I'll say that.
And we're going to dig deep into this season because a lot of things you mentioned are true. And I think that the people, especially, those, here in Baton Rouge who really, South Carolina has won this league, seven, 8 years in a row. And, that's the one thing that LSU has not done in a long time. And the fans here obviously see South Carolina as an obstacle there. And, everybody here is like, hey, they're losing all their starters. Yeah. But, and it kind of turns out though, when some of those bench players aren't too bad either, it's, the program continues even though the others are gone, and as we'll dig into, a lot of them are stepping up. Now, the reason people here are so excited about the matchup is that LSU has not beaten South Carolina in a little while. 14 in a row LSU has lost. The last win was back in 2012. LSU has scored under 60 points in nine of those 14 games. You and I have sat through all of them. Most of them have not been competitive. There was a 4-6 point game here a couple years ago in Coach Mulkey's first year. So that's why I asked kind of what the pulse was in South Carolina, because to be a rivalry, one of the teams has got to win a little bit, and LSU hadn't done much of that in this series lately.
Well, South Carolina's had a very good run, obviously, and especially the previous 4 years, because they basically had most of the same starters there for 4 years. That particular group, around here known as the Freshies, because they started as freshmen. At least three of them started as freshmen with, Aaliyah Boston and Zaya Cook and Bree Beal. And to have, names like that that could play on day one at a high level and play all 4 years, without, transferring and everything that's going on now, it seems unusual. And so it's just, it's weird, yes, that South Carolina has had that much success against a program like LSU. But, the last few years, it's because South Carolina had the same players. They had so much continuity from year to year. which is tough for any program to do, and even tougher now. And I think that was the reason for some of the recent success for South Carolina, is they had a lot of continuity. And we'll see how that turns out in the future. But yeah, it's going to be a great matchup.
Well, and I think that the fun of this is you've got Coach Don Staley, who has become unquestionably, obviously, the short list of best coaches in the nation, and Kim Mulkey is there also. They've combined for 6 national championships, and you're gonna the fan. It's fun for the fans. You got Team Staley, you got Team Mulkey, and the fans can go at each other. And I've had fans have actually told me, say, hey, you know what? Well, Kim, it only took her 2 years to win a national championship. It took Coach Staley 9 years. And I'm like, whoa, hold on a second. Situations are totally different. That's why I kind of want to go back. When your first year, a coach was Susan Walvius. She, had South Carolina doing an Elite Eight about 5 years before you got there, but then had kind of tapered off. And her last year was your first year, finished at 16-16, and Coach Walvius resigned. So you came back home to a program that was mediocre. Was that a right. fair statement?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then, so you go get this coach named Dawn Staley, and she was at Temple for 8 years. Most people knew her. I know her as the point guard on Coach Van Chancellor's Olympic team. That's where I knew Coach Staley. But then when you dig deep, she's won 6 NCAA tournaments 6 times in 8 years at Temple. How was she received? Because we know the South Carolina fan base, they follow South Carolina football so well. Even when South Carolina football is not great, you support your teams there. How excited, what was the reception when Coach was hired there at first?
It was pretty high. There were some people that didn't follow women's basketball that didn't understand why you were bringing in a coach that was getting a good contract, if you know what I mean. Because a lot of people at that time weren't following women's basketball here. They didn't really understand why that was a need. And then she did a lot of things right the right way early. Obviously, the recruiting was difficult early, but her name, because a lot of people, a lot of women knew who she was or know who she, she was, especially back then, because that was 16 years ago. Yeah. People still knew her as the player, and as the Olympian who carried the flag, at the Olympic yep. Games and things like that during opening ceremonies. So people still knew who she was. But then, she did a lot of things in the community very early on. And, she was up front. This wasn't going to be an overnight thing, because the program wasn't that. It wasn't, a Tennessee or something that had this tremendous history. There was some history back in the 80s, back in the old Metro Conference, but nothing, nothing like we're seeing now. But she did the right way, did a lot of community involvement things, got the fans to buy in, and it was a slow progression. But the thing was, there was progress each year. Yeah. Her first year, she kind of got blindsided. Two of her best players that were, from the holdovers from the former era, two of her best players got hurt in January in back-to-back games and were lost for the season. One of them was a second team all-conference player, so they're out for the year in year one, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, what, and things didn't go so well. But then she started making some headway recruiting, not just locally, but on a national level. Signed a recruit that was one of the top post players, actually ended up only being here for a year, but that kind of shook things up a little bit, going, wait, why is this player coming to South Carolina? And that opened some doors. And then we're very fortunate too that in South Carolina and nearby areas like Charlotte in North Carolina, there just happened to be a lot of really good talent at that time that decided to stay home, whereas a lot of other years, maybe, well, I know for a fact in previous years, they would go to North Carolina. They would go somewhere else. They wouldn't come here. And she got all that talent to stay home. People like Elisa Welch, who was from Goose Creek, that turned out to be a very good player here. Some folks from Georgia, like Elam Ibiam, turned out to be a really good player. And that helped pave the way. Asia Dozier, whose dad and uncle played here. And that started, breaking down some barriers. You get Tiffany Mitchell from Charlotte, who ended up being a 2-time SEC Player of the Year, that could have gone anywhere. And then you get Asia Wilson. Before that, you had Elena Coates, and Asia was right in her backyard here, the number one recruit in high school, who was going to go to Tennessee, but her grandma wanted to watch her play. Thank goodness, and grandma lived here.
Well, and you can look at the progression that first year, 10-18. Now, when I asked you about the reception, must have been a pretty good reception, because that final year of the Walvis era, your attendance was about 1,800. The first year with Coach Staley, 2,700. So you got a little bit of a bump. Then you go 14 and 15 in year two, 18 and 15, and then won a women's NIT game in year three. And I imagine for you, probably that big breakthrough was year four, when you go 25 and 10, and then you upset Purdue on the road to get to the first Sweet 16. Is that when the big buy-in from everybody kind of started to happen?
Yeah, and that's really, that team was special in a lot of ways. You definitely felt more fan support. That was also the first year that South Carolina beat Tennessee, and they beat them in Knoxville that year. Coach Summit was still there, and that was just unheard of at the time.
Yeah.
And what I loved about that team, that 2012 team, they won 25 games. They got to the Sweet 16, as you mentioned. They beat Purdue on their home floor to get to the Sweet 16. But when you look at that lineup, you had three very small guards. We called them the three Ishas, with Lakeisha Sutton, Aisha Walker, Markeisha Grant.
I remember them. Yes,
they were all around 5'7". Okay, and then the two starting forwards were 6 foot and 6'1". We didn't have anyone on the roster taller than 6'1", and they won 25 games somehow, including an upset win at Tennessee and beating Purdue. And I really thought that team really was one of the biggest reasons why the program is where it is today, because of the success they had of buying into the team philosophy that Coach Staley always preaches, of defense first and, you know, working inside out and just doing little things. Because when you look at that team on paper, there was no McDonald's High School All-Americans. No. Again, you had three small guards and you had two undersized post players. And for some reason it worked, because they all played well together. And the chemistry on that team was just unbelievable. And without that 2012 team, I don't know if South Carolina is where we are now, because they showed what could be done with just hard work. And I know it sounds cliche, but just that team atmosphere. There's no stars on that team, and they were a huge part of it.
Yeah, then the next year you win the SEC for the first time, go to the Sweet 16, and then year seven is when the attendance goes over 10,000, and it just goes crazy. But even with all of that, now let me back up. One thing you said, though, you said when Coach Staley first got there, she explained to everybody this wasn't going to be an overnight thing. It would take a few years, and that kind of gets into what I want to talk about on that is, a coach can't say that now because of the transfer portal. Hey, let's build. So, How fun was it for you to just watch her literally build that thing? I don't want to say from the ground up, but from, you know, the old school way of, you bring players in, they stay for 4 years, you know, most of them stay, and sometimes some will leave, but for the most part, you're trying to build the old school way of, you're bringing the high school kids and occasionally maybe a JUCO, but you build it old. I don't think we're going to see that again.
Yeah, I know. And it's a shame, because we talked about this with Coach Staley in our coaches show earlier this week, that, you know, player development can still happen, you know. And I think that was a big part, obviously, of the success as well, is getting players that didn't have to play right away and understood that it's okay that they don't have to play right away. And that's tougher nowadays, because, yeah, they want to play, right away now. And if they don't, they might go elsewhere. So that's hard. And you have to be a good communicator, I think, more than ever as a coach now, just saying, hey, we still got you. We still got your back, but we got these other kids too. So you kind of got to wait your turn. Like, you know, Destiny Henderson, who was the point guard on the 2022 national championship team, she could have gone anywhere and transferred after her maybe sophomore. She didn't become a starter till she was a senior. She was playing behind, you know, Ty Harris and all these other players. She could have gone anywhere, but she stayed and waited and developed, and she ended up being the most outstanding player of the Final Four.
Yeah, now that we're kind of in a new era, you know, Coach Staley has been a coach now for, you know, a quarter of a century. And Coach Mulkey, and I've talked to her about this, she's still old school. However, she knows that she has to embrace the transfer portal. Has Coach Staley kind of come around to that way of thinking, understanding that, hey, look, whether I like it or not, I've probably got to get at least one or two portal kids every cycle just to kind of keep up?
Yeah. I mean, you absolutely have to, because, you know, it's just the nature of NCAA intercollegiate athletics right now is, you know, as much as old folks like me and you don't love it as much, you know, obviously it can hurt your program and it can help your program, but it can provide quick fixes where you need it that can, and she understands that, sure, that it can help you get from good to great, because you can get pieces that you normally wouldn't get. Now, South Carolina maybe hasn't, knock wood, had to dive into it as much these last couple of years, but no doubt they've taken advantage of it. You know, They got Camila Cardoso 3 years ago from Syracuse. She spent, you know, 1 year there, didn't work out for her, but she had played with Raven Johnson in some internet other competitions, who's a point guard for South Carolina. I think that kind of helped with the familiarity. And then this year, you know, the big pickup for her through the portal was Tahina Pau-Pau from Oregon, who's provided something South Carolina hasn't had in a while, and that's a consistent three-point threat.
You know, I've been looking at your stats. You're shooting as a team well over 40%. I would just look forward. I bet you look forward to saying Pau-Pau for three. That has a good little ring to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, because sometimes I'll just say Pau-Pau-Pau. You know?
Well, aren't they? See, that's what, for the folks, that's what people like me and Brad sit around and think about all day long while we're not calling games, is ways to do that. Yeah, let's talk about that. So you finally get that first championship. It was to year nine. Talk about, you know, as an alum, as a person who watched the program grow, talk about your emotions in that last game. Because I know mine are kind of fresh since it just happened. Yeah. It was a few tears were shed. It was just a lot of joy, a lot of pride, because it was done the right way. You know, ours just happened so fast, though. Yours, I mean, was a long build. Ours was kind of quick, took 2 years. But talk about how satisfying it was to watch the acorn grow into an oak tree.
Well, you know, like you said, and it's the same thing for you, it was emotional. And, you know, I was fortunate when Coach Staley was inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame a few years back. She had invited, you know, her staff and myself as well to go to that, and that was really neat. And I always remember during her speech, and this was well before South Carolina was anything significant. I think it was that year, may have been 2012. We had just gone to the Sweet 16 or whatever, and so I still wasn't thinking national championship back then. But in her speech at the Hall of Fame, she talked, basically said, you know, to the fans, "Hey, stay with me as I bring a national championship to South Carolina." And I remember thinking, "Yeah, well, That still seems so far off, you know, that didn't seem, you know, we just got to the Sweet 16. That was great, you know, and then that was the first thing that came to mind when we actually won it, when South Carolina won it in 2017. It was like, wow, she did it. She promised it. I mean, she promised this. We're going to do it. And she did it.
I see. That's the weird thing, because you didn't go in for a long time and have the expectations, yet Coach Mulkey, her introductory speech points up at the banners like, "We're missing a championship. That's what I'm here to do." So it's here. It was almost like, all right, yeah, this is going to happen. But I imagine probably at what point did you, in the process, did you think, you know, we might could do this, I guess, when you started making Sweet 16s?
Yeah, you know, because you know how it is. When you get somewhere, then you want to get to the next level. Yeah. And I remember the first year South Carolina went to the Final Four in 2015. They ended up losing to Notre Dame. It was a great game. And at the time, I remember thinking, gosh, I wonder if this is the only time I'll get to the Final Four, because it was neat. You know, for people like you and me, that, I mean, that's something you always aspire to do as a broadcaster, is to do that highest level. And I'm wondering, because at that time, that's when, you know, UConn was still doing UConn things where they seemed unbeatable.
And Tennessee, too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and so you just wonder if you're ever going to get back there. And then the following year in 16, South Carolina had a really good team and got upset in the Sweet 16. You're thinking, well, you know, maybe we'll never get back there. And, you know, then they win it in 17, and then you graduate most of the folks from that, and you wonder, okay, well, maybe that's it. And then, unfortunately, you know, 2020, the COVID year, South Carolina was number one, and you know, that was the year I think they would have won it again.
That was going to be my next question. Is that something, because you were steamrolling everybody that year. You just blasted through the SEC tournament. I think that would have been a third ring that year. I mean, that would have been the second at the time, obviously. But you were hands down better than everybody that year.
No, I agree. I think that may have been the best of the three. Mm-hmm. I call that the third championship team. And then, you know, but yeah, going back to the first one, yeah, it was very emotional because it's the first. And, you know, while Coach said, you know, that's what she set out to do.
They all say that, though.
Right. Yeah. But you just never know if you're really going to get there. And then when you see it like you did last year, and even though Coach Mulkey had done it before at Baylor, it's to do it as early as she did, you know, in a new program, you know, was still amazing, obviously, in the run they had and how well they played. So, you know, anytime you can do it, it's no matter what the circumstances, you got to be, you know, for people like us that have no control over it, you just have to appreciate the moment and, you know, appreciate the hard work that everybody puts in to do it, because you just never know if you're ever going to do it again or get back there, because so much can happen. And yeah, it's just a neat thing. I mean, I know you're an emotional guy too. It's hard not to choke that back, because you got to tell a story. But man, you know, that's something that will never get old. Even, you know, winning SECs and winning SEC tournaments, that stuff never gets old. It doesn't. It's tremendous. It's so much fun to be a part of.
Well, and then, you know, then we did it for 5 years in a row, made it to the Final Four, never got over the hump. But then when that era kind of ended and then you get back to where you're just kind of another team, then you miss it. And hopefully you'll never get to that point, but it's, you mentioned the words earlier, and it's like, now that you've won one, is every year now championship or bust? Disappointment if it's not a championship now? And that's for us or fans or whoever.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think you know you guys might be feeling that as well right now. Once you've hit that peak, it's hard to go back, right?
Yeah.
And you know that's the thing that, you know, last year for South Carolina was so tough because, you know, they win it all in 2022. They'd gotten to the Final Four in 2021 and lost in the Final Four to a good Stanford team after we basically missed a layup at the buzzer. And then you win the championship and you had everybody back basically last year. So the anticipation all year long was, oh, you're going to win it again.
Yes.
And that was a lot of pressure, even though it was a good team and kids that had been through it. That's a lot of pressure. They didn't lose a game all year until they, you know, ran into a buzzsaw with this girl who happens to shoot the basketball really well from Iowa, Caitlin Clark, who just had a career night against us and things didn't go South Carolina's way, still had a chance to win it, but, you know, lost it on the last possession. And all of a sudden you lose and that's your only loss of the season. People are looking at it like, you didn't get it done. I'm like, well, they went 36-1 and people are disappointed. And I'm like, I mean, I wasn't personally, I was disappointed for them, but not at them.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it, and you know, I think LSU can feel that too. When you climb that, you get to the very top of the mountain, and now everybody's giving you their best game every night, even against teams you could play St. Mary's for the deaf, dumb, and blind, and they're going to give you a game because they're going to play out of their mind, you know, because they're playing you. It's such a hard thing when the expectations are so high, because I don't know if fans truly understand how hard it is to win, especially at that level. Because especially, you know, once you get to the tournament and the Final Four and the Elite Eight, there's a lot of teams that are, even if you're the best team, there's a lot of teams that are still good enough to beat you.
On any given night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And so I know it's cliche, but it's hard for the coaches and especially for the kids that, you know, to have those expectations put on them, like, oh, you won it last year, you should win it this year. Like, well, no, that's not how sports works.
Well, yeah, let's compare notes a little bit on the year after the championship. I wanted to do this before the season, didn't get a chance to, but now that we're here, we can still discuss. You know, the last three road games LSU has played, we have drawn the record crowd. Ole Miss, Alabama, and Auburn, all three have drawn the biggest crowds. It's, you know, I kind of jokingly tell people, like, hey, the circus is in town, because when we get to town, we have a lot of fans show up, a lot of locals show up just to kind of see what it's all about. Social media was just kind of becoming a big thing. But talk about how that first year after the championship was, because there are expectations, but the attention, even from the years we went to the Final Four, but winning that championship, the attention. And it doesn't hurt that you got an Angel Reese, Flauje Johnson with millions of Instagram followers, but that attention just ratcheted up like exponentially because of the championship.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's neat when you get to do all the parades and the things that come along with it. But it's hard when the expectations are there and you lose people. Like when South Carolina won its first one in 17, well, they graduated just about that whole team other than Asia Wilson. And so the next year they get to the Elite Eight and people were disappointed. Like, well, it's a different team, you know? And so, you know, it's neat having all the attention and the attendance. And I mean, you and I have the opportunity to play home games, to broadcast home games in very big arenas, you know, where the crowds are tremendous. Where South Carolina plays, we have an 18,000 seat arena and, you know, an average attendance is between 12 and 15,000. I think we're averaging 15,000 this year. And for the quote unquote big games, you know, it's going to be 18,000 and it's crazy. You know, when I first started this, you mentioned I used to work at a Division II school for 13 or 14 years where, you know, if you had 500 people in the stands, it was a good night. And now all of a sudden, you know, we're looking up, you and I, we're seeing 14, 15, 16,000 people for women's basketball. And it's just so cool, you know, how the sport, but also when you're winning, how everybody wants to be, you called it a circus. Everybody wants to be a part of the circus and see the show. And that's what it is. It's great entertainment. And it's just a cool atmosphere, even as you said, when you go on the road and people are filling in either one because they want to beat you, or two, just to see what it is, or maybe, you know, wear the, you know, wear their greatest Kim Mulkey outfit to show that they're a fan or something. You know, I mean, it's just great. It's great that it's become a spectacle.
Well, you know, and it worked against us at Auburn, because what happened at Auburn, you know, there were a lot of LSU people there, but there, you know, a lot of Auburn people were there just kind of as a curiosity. But sure. With about 6 minutes to go, and it was still a one possession game, the Auburn people started to think, hey, we can do this. And they became a huge home court advantage. And I think that kind of helped pull them through. So if you're going to go and draw those people, you better be ready to get everybody's best shot. And I'm sure you felt that way, that it didn't matter who you played, you were getting the A game. And the perfect example here is Auburn. You know, they beat us a week ago Sunday. And then their next game, they score 50 at Vanderbilt. You know, the kids who hit 50% against LSU shot 30%. So that they just had that extra whatever, and they used a lot of it up against against your team when they come in.
Yeah, and when you go to a place like Auburn, too, the neat thing with their arena, it's a small arena, what, about like 7,000 smaller. Damn. And so it doesn't take a lot to make that place nuts, you know, to make it, you know, loud and impactful. And then when your team, when the home team can keep the fans in it longer, then yeah, they become fully engaged, and then it's on. And you know, and that's the thing, you're just watching from the third person perspective of watching LSU this year and saying, all right, LSU is seeing this year what I've seen the last few years, and we talked about this a while ago, of everybody's giving you their best shot, and everywhere you go, you're going to get that, where, you know, you're the marquee team, you're the, you know, you're the team with the black hat, man, right? Because you won it last year. So now, you know, now you're the team that everybody's chasing. And, you know, they're the team that everybody wants to beat. That's how, you know, Tennessee used to be for them, how it was for UConn and all that. So, you know, it's all part of it. But I think in the long run, it makes for a better team when you play in those hostile environments, even if you have to take a loss once in a while, because you were like, all right, now we got to make sure we show up in the first half or do this, because everybody's got a couple of McDonald's All-Americans now and can have a good night.
Go see the guys at Subaru of Baton Rouge for your new or pre-owned vehicle. They have a large selection of new, certified, and pre-owned vehicles to fit any budget. The Subaru of Baton Rouge family will treat you right and make your purchase experience an easy one. Visit Subaru online at SubaruBR.com. Complimentary maintenance included.
All right, last thoughts on the past, then we're going to talk about the matchup coming up. So when you won the second championship, how exact? Because I want to be that one day. I want to win that second championship, so I want to know what to prepare for. How were your emotions second championship compared to first? I know it was a different set of kids because they were quite a few years apart, but how was winning that second one? I want to know.
It still didn't get old or anything like that, but it was a little bit easier to handle, if you will, because because you had done it before. But it was almost a little bit of a sense of relief too. It was totally different kids, but it was a lot of joy for that particular group because of what had happened the year before. You know, they had a tough loss in the Final Four, and they kind of had to live with that all year of, you know, seeing over and over on ESPN the missed shot at the end against Stanford, and that's all you ever saw was Aaliyah Boston crying. And actually, that was one of my favorite pictures afterwards, was after they won the second one, was Aaliyah Boston doing an interview with Holly Rowe and saying, you know, last year all you guys wanted to show was, you know, tears of sadness. Well, how about some tears of joy? You know, is basically what she was saying. And it was, I was really happy. Again, I think it was easier having gone through, it was easier to control what you were saying a little bit, control your emotions, but it was just happiness for those kids. Cause that was an exceptional group. In addition to being exceptional basketball players, man, they were a really neat group to be around. So it was just, you know, joy for them. But no, if LSU does it again this year, you're going to be just as happy, because it, again, you just never know when you're going to get back there. So, you know, anytime you can, you know, hold up one finger at the end of the year, yeah, you got to love it.
Well, let's look at this year's matchup. Now, last year we went to Carolina, and the big talk was, you know, Aaliyah Boston, Angel Reese. So Angel didn't have a great game, and Aaliyah, mundane, 14 points, 9 rebounds. She could do that in her sleep, I think. Right. But it was Cardoso with off the bench in 21 minutes, 18 points, 13 rebounds, 3 blocks, and she's back. And and I think we're going to get more of her outside of just 21 minutes off the bench. But as you discussed earlier, it, you know, when you the general thought of everybody out there is there's no way they can be as good again. It's going to take a while for them to bring it together. And then as you started rattling them off, and I'm looking like you crush Notre Dame, then you crush Maryland, then you humiliate Clemson. And I say that because I know that's what South Carolina people like to do, is they like to humiliate Clemson, right? And then, you know, you go on, and then you had a little bit of a challenge at North Carolina, but then you beat Utah by 9. Up in Connecticut, and then jump into conference play and just kick right along. So I think you kind of answered it, but are you almost amazed at how quickly it seems to have come together?
Yeah, it is amazing, just because, again, it's a totally different group. It's, you know, all 5 starters are gone. And so, you know, and there's still, believe it or not, people always think I'm, you know, being like Lou Holtz here, but like, no, they've still got some things to work out, you know, and coach, I think, would say the same thing defensively and some other things. And, you know, I think one thing that's, you know, starting to come along is the bench has been playing well. And that was a big part of last year. You mentioned Cardoso came off the bench last year, and having Camilla and Aaliyah Boston on the floor at the same time was great, because you had an All-American in Boston, obviously, that garnered a lot of attention and a lot of double teams. Well, then that meant that Camilla Cardoso at 6'7" was going to be left either by herself or with someone who wasn't 6'7", and that's why she had a big night. You know, whereas now Camilla's in there without Aaliyah, it's a lot tougher. But, you know, when you get, you know, I think one of the things that is neat about South Carolina's team, and maybe a little bit, you know, head-scratching for folks that look at South Carolina on paper, is there's nobody whose numbers jump out at you. I mean, yeah. Camilla is averaging a double-double, but averaging 13 points a game. Okay, that's solid. But after that, you've got a few players averaging 9, 10, 11, 12 points. And that's the way it's been all year, where it's rare where you see anyone this year for South Carolina score 20 or more points. It's usually a whole bunch of people with anywhere between 8 and 12 points, you know, in a given game. Maybe you'll have, like the other night, I think South Carolina had 7 players in double figures, but maybe nobody over 13. That's just, you know, how this team is made. And, you know, it's not a lot of individual superstars, but for whatever reason, it's working.
Well, you know, now you mentioned, yeah, Cardoso is the leading scorer at 13, but you go 13.1, 12.7, 11.1, 10.8. Okay. And then 9.9, 9.5, 9.2. But the minutes, now, because you've, you know, for two things, you've had a lot of blowouts and you've got a deep bench. The leading minute player is a Pau Pau, and she's only averaging 26 minutes a game, if you know, and Cardoso at 25 minutes. But if they have to play 33, 34 minutes a game, their numbers would probably be a little bit higher. But you haven't really had any games that came down to the wire yet. So, but I'm sure if they played, you know, if she needs 36 minutes out of them, they can do it.
Yeah, it absolutely. But, you know, I think, you know, there's been games this year where they maybe get off to slow starts and they've been tested, you know, early in the first half, maybe fallen behind a bit and had to come back. And, you know, so they've kind of forged their mettle that way, but they still use the bench even in those games. I think one of the neat things this year is when some of the starters maybe aren't playing as great, let's say Camilla or something like that. There are a couple of players off the bench, Sanaya Fagan and Ashlyn Watkins, have played well enough where coach is okay with the bench players actually playing more minutes than the starters in some cases, which is a neat thing to see. It's not obviously ideal. You want production. But it is kind of neat when you feel like, all right, maybe pick a player. She doesn't have it tonight or whatever, or they've got her number tonight, that you throw a different look and it might work out well for you. But, you know, it's going to be neat. I'm really anxious for this atmosphere for the game in Baton Rouge on Thursday, because I know the atmosphere is going to be crazy, just to see how South Carolina handles it. Yeah. They've been in a few hostile environments when we went to North Carolina this year. Granted, it's a smaller arena there at Carmichael. I think it holds about 7,000, but it was packed to the gills, sold out. And it was I think it shook South Carolina in the first couple of minutes. And then after that, they were fine. And same thing at Duke. You know, it was a crowded place, but those are smaller places. I'll be interested to see how it comes together when you go to a bigger arena like the Maravich Center and it's packed to the gills and it's crazy. So I'm interested to see how South Carolina comes out of the gates.
I can promise you it's going to be crazy. I think literally, yep. As far as I'm concerned, this is going to be the most the most anticipated regular season game in the history of that building. You know, we had a couple with Tennessee back in the Final 4 years that were pretty highly anticipated, but I've never seen anything like this. People, as I said earlier, people have been talking about this game since the schedule came out, and we were kind of surprised. And now I kind of get it. We figured it would be like a Sunday game in prime time, like the game was last year.
Yeah.
But now that we find out it's Thursday in the 7 o'clock spot on ESPN, I think they're trying to see like how big of a rating they can get on a Thursday night, because they were usually, you know, Sundays, it seems like, when the big games have been reserved for. So I think the numbers on this are going to be good, judging by last year. It was the most watched regular season game ever at that point. One thing you guys are bringing to the table with Pau Pau and then Bree Hall, who's been there, but you've got two lights out 3-point shooters, and that seems to me almost unfair when you got the inside and then they're like, hey, we're double team, let's just kick it out. Pau Pau is shooting 57% from three. She's 42 of 74. That's unreal. And Hall is 31 of 64 for 48%. I mean, you'd rather give up two than three, but she's a better than 50-50 proposition, and we're more than halfway through the season. That has obviously, she's been a big addition to what you guys are trying to get done.
Yeah, that was the big pickup through the portal. And the neat thing with Tahina Pau Pau was that she can play the one or the two. She starts, but when she starts, she's basically the two. But then there's different times of the game where she's going to play the one, she's going to play point, so she can do both. And what I really like about her and her game is, even though she shoots it well and can score, you know, knock wood, is that she doesn't have to get hers, so to speak. Like, she's not a volume shooter. She's not, at the end of the game, you're not going to see her with, you know, 10 to 15 shots a game. Most of the time, she might only take three or four 3-point attempts in a game and hopefully make a couple of them. She doesn't feel like she has to get hers, that she still has a point guard mentality of, all right, let me look for the tall girls close to the basket first, or see what we can get going in transition. And then, you know, if they leave me open at the outside, well, yeah, I'm going to take this and make them, you know, extend the defense. So she's been a good addition, but it's our unselfishness that I think makes her so good, that she doesn't feel like, hey, I need to jack up 10 3-pointers a game and get mine. That, you know, if she only scores twice, she's good with that.
And then a final player we'll kind of highlight here, Malaysia Full Wiley. Is that correct?
Yes.
A freshman. So you got to, you know, the great recruiting class. Freshman comes in. She's averaging 11 most of her games off the bench. Talk about her game, what we can look for from her Thursday.
Well, there's one thing, and as a radio announcer, I think you can appreciate this, is she makes layups exciting.
Because
there's a lot of behind the back, no look, behind the head, you know, where it's not a typical layup, and it makes it fun. You know, there are moments where, yeah, she looks like a freshman sometimes, and maybe sometimes there's a little bit too much mustard on the hot dog out there, but she can do some pretty nifty things as a youngster that kind of, you know, make you raise your eyebrow and just say, oh. And the season opener, we're playing Notre Dame, and she did this behind the back kind of, you know, thing with a layup, you know, in traffic with players around her, and got it to go. And, you know, you had Magic Johnson tweeting her, you know, and that's when you know you're doing some neat stuff, when you have, you know, former NBA greats tweeting her out. So like I said, she's not going to wow you overall with the stats or the shooting percentages, but maybe once a game she's going to do some kind of layup that's not your typical layup.
Does Coach Staley cringe sometimes when she does those things, or just kind of lets her go?
She just kind of laughs and shakes her head, you know, and says, all right, you know, as long as you finish, it's okay, I guess, right? You know, like we have another player, Ashlyn Watkins, and I know you can appreciate this because you've probably seen it with some of the greats at LSU. Ashlyn Watkins is our dunker. She's dunked twice in her career, including the other night at Kentucky.
And it was a legit dunk. It wasn't just
– it was a one-handed throwdown, yeah, and she can get up, and you can kind of tell – I mean – she does it all the time in practice. You can kind of tell when it's coming. You can tell the angle she's taking on a breakaway, and it's kind of fun. She's a tremendous athlete to watch as well.
We've had one. Sylvia Fowles dunked once in a game, and it was fun to call, because, you know, I mean, that's the one thing we don't get to do is we don't get to call dunks very often. So those are kind of fun. So it is going to be a showdown, and, you know, the thing. And again, our people here are just going out of their mind about this game. But what's still, it's January 25th. It's not even February yet. I think both teams are going to learn a lot, and I think both teams are going to get better regardless of the result of this ball game.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's big in terms of standings and stuff like that. And it's obviously huge especially for LSU right now because of the Auburn game last week, where you get this game and it puts you even, right? You're still very much in the race for the SEC championship. If you get two behind, now obviously anything can happen. It makes that road a lot tougher. So, you know, it's huge, but yeah, you know, coaches always like it when, not the coaches like losses, but they always like it when they've got their players' attention, right? I would imagine after the loss to Auburn, not that you guys were having a problem perhaps getting attention, that coach had the players' attention a little bit more about things they needed to do better, yes, right?
You know,
that
100%.
Players maybe, yeah, coach, we're still winning, you know. So, you know, sometimes a loss can be good. But, yeah, I think this game is going to be great for both the teams. One, because it's going to be great for both the teams to be in an atmosphere like that. It's going to feel like a Final Four, even though it's a regular season game in January, you know, with game day being there and all that. It's going to be cool for the young ladies there that maybe never will be in that kind of atmosphere again. Who knows? So it's going to be a cool experience in that regard. It's going to be neat to see how they handle, because the pressure, even as you and I know, okay, it's a game in January, but there's probably going to be some pressure. It's going to feel like there's pressure because of the attention. There's going to be more interviews, more stuff that goes along with it, just to see how they handle it, especially the ones that have not been through this before. Now, LSU, obviously, you know, you look at the talent that LSU has that coming back and that came in, whether they're freshmen or transfer. And like when I watch LSU again as a third person, I sit there and go, good Lord, how does anyone, you know, how does anyone stay in the gym with these folks? Because there's just so much tremendous talent. And I sit there and think, you know, I remember when the schedule came out this year, I kept thinking, oh, good, South Carolina doesn't have to play LSU twice, you know, because.
It was mutual, trust me on that.
Yeah, you know, because, you know, and I'm sure your coach is like, no, we want to play them twice. I'm like, nope, I don't want no part of that twice unless, you know, if we meet again in the SEC tournament, fine. But, you know.
Well, we're everybody here is looking forward to it. And I know it's going to be quite an atmosphere. And I'm lucky, and I know you feel just lucky to be a part, and something that we'll never take for granted. Brad, we'll see you this coming Thursday. It's going to be wild. Be ready.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be fun. Look forward to seeing everyone there. It's going to be a great atmosphere, and hopefully it's a good game. Hopefully the game lives up to its billing. You know, maybe it'll come down to the final shot. That would be a lot of fun for both of us.
I don't know if I can handle that. We'll see. But if you tell me that right now, I'll take it, though.
Yeah, me too. If it comes down to the last shot, sign me up.
All right, Brad, thanks for joining us. Good conversation. We'll talk to you Thursday.
Thanks so much.